Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
All right, time to touch base with our question of the week on Kelman on Cliff Central. This week we're asking, should we fear success? It's inspired by a piece from Isaac Moorhouse on Medium.com that Isaac says is in fact inspired by a show regular of ours, TK Coleman, who's going to join us live from the States in a second. And the idea of the article is that sometimes, as much as we crave success, there's also a lot that comes with success that some people might find overwhelming, which in turn might be something that people are afraid of. So when you achieve your dream, when you have 1,000,001 fans on Facebook and you can't leave your house, that would be what you once thought was your definition of success, but that in fact can become something that is a little scary. And so should we be a little bit afraid of success? I guess a lot of it's to do with how you define success. What does success mean to you? What is your relationship with it? How does it make you feel? How should it make you feel? And what kind of energy should you put into achieving your own definition of success? Joining us now to elaborate a little bit on the article and have a conversation around it is a good friend of ours in the show, TK Coleman. What's up?
Hey, Kelman, how's it going, man?
Good, good. Yeah, I hear you're going to be in Joburg soon.
I am. It'll actually be at the end of the month.
Fantastic. I hope you're going to swing past and say hi.
Hey, you know it, man. You know I can't come there without doing that. I'm excited, brother.
It's going to be dope. All right, let's get into this here. It's a big statement. Should we fear success? It almost seems like a dumb question to ask, but then you start thinking about it and you start, you know, getting into the intricacies of this article and some of the stuff actually pops and makes sense. What's your stance walking into this conversation?
Well, we should not fear success because ultimately I believe we can handle whatever it is that comes at us, right? But there is what I call a cycle of self-sabotage that does make success a lot more scary than failure. So even though I don't think we should ultimately fear success, I do believe that when you really think about it, Kelman, success is a lot more frightening than failure, even though it doesn't appear to be that way on the surface. So I'll give you an example. You've heard this before that more people are afraid of giving a public speech than they are of dying, right? Have you heard that?
Yeah.
You know, when I was younger and I used to hear people say that, I thought that was absurd because isn't death more frightening than giving a public speech? But then I thought about it and I said, well, wait a minute. There are no responsibilities that come with being dead. You know, it's somebody else's job to plan your funeral. It's somebody else's job to perform the eulogy. It's someone else's job to properly bury you. All you have to do is just lie there and be dead. I mean, being dead is something that's impossible to get wrong. Once you're there, you do it perfectly, right? Yeah. And so there are no responsibilities that come with it. And that's a lot like what failure is. You know, when you fail, yeah, it's embarrassing. Yeah, you have to admit that you're wrong, but you know, it's over. But what about success? When you succeed, there are all kinds of responsibilities that come with that. There's the responsibility of perhaps being a role model or, you know, having the public judge you and criticize you for your work. I mean, it's one thing to have interesting ideas or interesting art inside your imagination, but when you let it out and reveal it to the world, that's when people say, oh, well, that's stupid. That's dumb. That's offensive. You should have done it this way. I don't like it that way. In the age where people view content with the attitude of why wasn't I consulted, being successful is a very frightening thing because there's a lot of pressure and responsibility that comes with it. So what this article tries to get at is using a visualization exercise, not for the purpose of creating things with mental magic, but for the purpose of warming up to the idea of seeing yourself as successful and sort of cultivating that belief that this is something you can handle, because the main reason people fail isn't because they fear failure. It's because they don't believe they can handle success.
Huh. So how does one begin to reprogram one's opinion towards success? Because actually you land up doing yourself the biggest disservice, which is, you know, not letting the world see all the amazing things that you're able to do. So how do you get better at kind of programming yourself to not fear the implications that exist actually in your mind before they even, you know, come into reality of what comes with success?
Oh man, you know, that's a great question. This reminds me of a little practice that my mother did with me when I was young. When she was teaching me how to read, she would always have me read out loud, even if she knew that I could read well, or even if she knew I understood the words I read, because from her point of view, it wasn't enough for me to be able to read sophisticated sounding words and understand their meaning. She also wanted me to experience what it was like to hear intelligent things being uttered in the sound of my own voice. Why was that, Kelman? Because she never wanted me to be shocked or surprised or taken aback by the idea that intelligence can come from me, that something profound can be uttered in my own voice. So I might be able to look at a word like, you know, epistemic implication, or I might be able to look at a word like ontological and know for myself what that means. But my mother wanted me to say the word because she believed there was a power in hearing intelligence come from my own voice. One of the things that Isaac Morehouse gets at in this article is he talks about this visualization exercise, and he talks about how one of the ways we deal with fear is we imagine the worst case scenario, right? All right. And there's something about that that demystifies the experience. Well, in a similar way, what if you imagine the best case scenario? What if you imagine this life that you love? There's something powerful, not necessarily in the sense of the secret where just because you visualize something, you're going to get it independently of the effort you put into it. But there's something powerful in the sense that it demystifies this idea of you being successful. And that's a very simple practice. Most people have a hard time placing themselves in situations where they occupy positions of influence or they're able to have an impact on the world. So simply by closing your eyes, visualizing yourself saying the kinds of things that an influential person would say, or visualizing the things that people would say to you as you're impacting their lives, those sorts of things can be extremely powerful.
I mean, it comes down to believing in yourself, right?
Absolutely, it does. But how do we go about cultivating that belief? What many people do is they try to use tactics like positive thinking or self-affirmations. And, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but you can say affirmations until you're blue in the face. But if you say them without conviction, it just becomes delusional thinking, right? Like, so much of what gets called positive thinking is just sort of like spraying air freshener on a pile of dung. You got to get rid of the dung if you want to get rid of the crap, right? If you want to get rid of the smell. And I think in a similar way, I think the best way to cultivate belief isn't by trying to force yourself to accept positive things about your life. I think it's actually taking risk and getting the chance to experience yourself either having some success or having failure and realizing that that failure doesn't have the power to destroy you. Confidence is developed through action and through the realization that action will not kill you.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming so crystal clear that it's a lot easier sometimes to just say, oh, well, that didn't go my way, and then kind of, you know, give up. And that's not even necessarily motivated from, you know, something that is logical at all, but it seems like society's reconditioned or reprogrammed what that logic is.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're also able to maintain these stories that we tell ourselves. You know, how many times have, you know, we watched a television show and, you know, we watch a television show and we think to ourselves, oh, that guy isn't a good actor? Or how many times has somebody been in an audience and they hear a professional speaker and they say, oh, I can speak better than that guy? Or they see a work of art and they say, I can do better than that. I could write a bestseller. And as long as they don't act, as long as they don't move towards that dream, they get to maintain that story. But the moment they move towards that dream, they have to start experiencing the reality, right? The reality of rejection, the reality of criticism, the reality of misunderstanding and all these other things. So there are some very strong incentives for people to remain in a position that makes it impossible for them to achieve success, because with that success comes a whole new set of problems that simply don't confront those who fail. You know, Stephen Pressfield, the author of The War of Art, talks about this concept of resistance. And he says, anytime you set about to do something that is meaningless or low value, isn't aimed at contributing to the evolution of our species, do you notice how the entire universe seems to support you? You know, if you say, tonight I'm just going to sit down and watch reruns of Breaking Bad, it's like you have no problems. But then if you decide, hey, I'm going to start working out, I'm going to start a new diet, or tonight I'm going to sit down and read and feed my mind by reading this book, that's when a friend you never heard from, you know, for like 10 years decides to call you up at that moment. And they say, Kelman, you got to come hang out with me, man. Like the one moment you decided you were going to do something different to change your life. You know, it's a funny thing how that works, but it's the resistance, and it must be confronted and we can be confronted. And the resistance is rooted in the idea that we can't handle success, perhaps because we don't deserve it, or we'll screw it up.
What's great about this logic, though, is that it actually, if you understand it, it can help you when you're receiving criticism from other people to take that, you know, criticism from where it comes. So if you get, you know, a message of, I don't like what you're doing here, I don't like what you're doing there, there's almost a power that comes from knowing that, you know, you're doing something that that person isn't doing, and it's their insecurity, and it has very little to do maybe with what you're actually producing. So it can help you keep that hate in check as well, because it's about their narrative and they're just sort of pushing it onto you.
Absolutely. You know, there's a book by Thomas Troward, published in 1908, called The Edinburgh Lectures on Mental Science. And he says, the laws of flotation were not discovered by studying the sinking of things, right? But by studying those things that successfully floated and improving one's understanding of why they did so. I think another strategy we could use is simply studying successful people and how they handle these types of situations. You know, one practice I encourage people to do if they're afraid of criticism or if they're currently dealing with it is make a short list of like three people that you really respect, that you really admire, you really think they're doing great work, and this person or these people constitute your idea of human beings that are worthy of praise. And Google each name. So let's say your person is Michael Jordan or Steph Curry or, you know, whoever it may be. Google that name and then put the word scandal or gossip after it. And I guarantee every time you'll find something. Mm. Go watch a YouTube video with that person in it and then read the comments. And I guarantee you every time you'll find something negative. And I think it's helpful to realize that this is something that everyone goes through and everyone is dealing with. And that sort of softens the blow a little bit, right? Because it says, you know, success isn't this, you know, thing that cannot be handled. There are millions of people that are dealing with it every day. So maybe it's something that I can deal with also.
TK, talk to me about finding the degree of which you go balls to the wall in anything that you want to do and figuring out your own sort of elastic band. I mean, some people will go and, you know, just their personality is one that they'd love to risk it all and lay it all out on the line. Some people are more conservative. And in our own individual ways, we have to find our levels of what's challenging to us, because what's challenging, you know, to me is completely different to what's challenging to another person just based on our natural disposition. So finding that, you know, elasticity in a personal capacity, how do we look at getting to what that is?
That's a great question, Kelman. I think part of the problem is we evaluate ourselves when we're trying to, you know, determine how motivated we are or how much we measure up. We evaluate ourselves according to all of these external standards, right? There are, I mean, even in the traditional working world, there has always been a tendency to idolize waking up early as the definition of responsibility, right? If you get up at 6:30 in the morning and you start the day early, you're a responsible person. And if you sleep in to noon because you stay up late, well, you're not responsible. But of course, it's really not about those external standards. It's about results. It's about outcomes and how good you are at producing those. So we have to get away from external standards and ask ourselves on an internal level, what is it that is meaningful to me? What is it that fires me up? Not because I think other people will respect me or be impressed, but because this is the thing that I gotta do because it's what my nature demands of me. When I was in college, I entered college as a theater major, and I remember someone asking the chairman of the department, you know, about all of the difficulties that an aspiring actor would face. And they would say, well, you know, what about a theater degree? Does it offer any job security? And how do you make money with it? And the chairman of the department looked at that person and he said, look, if you have a choice, you should do something else. You should only major in theater if you don't have a choice. If this is the thing that you gotta do because you gotta do. But if you can close your eyes and visualize yourself doing something else and you can feel good about that thing, then go do it. And I would extend the application of that advice to everything. And I would say the real key to motivation is finding a why that is so strong that all of the objections are irrelevant, because it is the thing that you don't have a choice about. don't do the things that you have to do. Do the things that you cannot help but do, the things that your nature demands of you. One of my favorite quotes in the world, Howard Thurman, he says, ask not yourself what the world needs, but rather what makes you come alive. For that is what the world needs. Mm. People who have come alive. And you know, Kelman, there are a million and one causes. And one thing you have to come to grips with in life is that when you die, you are going to leave millions of causes, you know, unattended to. You can't be everywhere. You can't help everyone. You can't do all the acts of good. So which acts of good are you going to be most effective at doing? It's the ones that make you come alive. It's the ones that won't let you sleep at night. Yeah. It's the ones that won't give you peace if you ignore them. And we know what those things are. We just don't give ourselves permission to do them because of something like, well, I haven't figured out how to make money doing it. Or, well, you know, we make those kinds of excuses. But when you zoom in on that thing that you don't have a choice to do, that thing that you keep coming back to, that's where you get the strength. It's not in finding some sort of how-to strategy, because if you don't have a why that's strong enough, your how-to strategy doesn't matter. But if you have a why that is strong enough, you'll find a how-to, even in the absence of any idea.
Well, this is really powerful stuff that you're saying now, because very often, I mean, you'll ask, you can go up to a kid at like a dinner table or whatever, or you could go up to another person and you say, what is it that you want to achieve? And they say, I want to achieve X, Y, and Z. And maybe the question actually should be, why do you want to achieve this thing, as opposed to what do you want to achieve?
I like that way of reframing the question. And here's another one I would suggest. I mean, the question is asked from this standpoint of what would you like to achieve? Or we say, what do you want to do when you grow up? How about something much simpler than that? Like, what do you like?
Yeah.
You know, what do you enjoy? Isn't it amazing how much we just disrespect passion? We just dismiss it as this irrelevant, irresponsible thing, right? Let's get down to business. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to achieve? I mean, my gosh, let's just start with something much simpler. What do you like? What do you like to do? And I have people say to me all the time things like, I don't have any passions. And I go, really? You don't have any taste? Okay, let's go watch a horror movie right now. I'm sorry, I don't like horror movies. Oh, so you do have taste. You do have passions. Well, let's talk a little more, because I can have a really easy, fun time helping you see that you have all types, all kinds of passions and tastes, but you've just been talked out of having them because society has conditioned you to believe that these things are irrelevant because you don't have any easy, obvious answers to the question of how you're going to make money doing it. But all of the great answers to tough questions are answers that cannot come, you know, in just a minute of thought. All the answers worth having are the answers that take time. And we fail to indulge what we're really interested in long enough to get the answers that can provide the guidance and motivation we need.
This is really, really great stuff, TK. It's about sort of repositioning and rethinking about what you want from your life and why you want those specific things. Give me the final power words here in terms of what we should really be taking away from this conversation.
You know, Speed Levitch says, there are secret places inside the human soul that know nothing of the outside world. I would say everyone has a secret. And when I say the word secret, I don't mean that in the negative sense that people often use it. Like, I know something scandalous about you, or I know something dark and dirty about you. When I say everyone has a secret, what I mean is deep within the soul of every human being, there is a spark, there is a fire, there is something that burns, and there is something that cannot be put out, no matter how much society tries to condition you to live a life of fear. And I would say, get in touch with that. Go within and find that. It's not something that already exists. It's not something that anyone can tell you. They can't tell you what it is. You've got to discover that secret for yourself. You know, Seth Godin talks about the idea of maps. And he says, if I can give you a map for your life instantly becomes worthless, because the value is not in you. The value is in the map. There's something within you for which there is no map. Go within, get in touch with it, and bring it forth. And that's the key to your success and your motivation.
Power. The piece is called Fear of Success is a Thing Too on Medium.com, written by Isaac Morehouse. TK Coleman weighing in on that piece there. TK, thank you so much for hanging out.
Kelman, it's always fun hanging out with you, man. I'll see you in Johannesburg.
Fantastic. We're excited to touch base. That's the TK Coleman there, live from the States. Yeah, man, important things to take away from that. It's don't be overwhelmed by what success could bring you. Owe it to yourself to do as much as you damn well can in your time on planet Earth.
Kelman on CliffCentral.com.